18. Peter is surprised. With the approach of midterm exams in early November, Verity was kept very busy fitting in homework, Bible reading, and the Tuesday night seminars. November 12th was the last Learn to Read the Bible Effectively seminar. However, Mr. Henderson had suggested those who were interested could continue on with Mr. Simons and himself reading through Genesis and applying the study skills they had learned. The Soul study sheet had provoked a great deal of lively discussion, which most people found quite interesting. Nevertheless, a few seemed unwilling to accept that the Bible did not support a belief they held very dear. One older man, Henry, who had been rather quiet for the previous 5 evenings, now asked Mr. Simons to explain several New Testament passages. With every passage, Mr. Simons kindly directed Henry back to the context of the verse and reminded him that the word soul really referred to a living being, their mind, their life, their existence. "What about Matthew chapter 10, verse 28? Questioned Henry further. It reads, "Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. See? The soul and body are two distinct things. One can be killed and one can't." "You're saying then," replied Mr. Simons, "that the soul can't be killed."
"That's right."
"Well, if a soul is truly immortal and can't die, then what does the rest of the verse mean?" Henry read tentatively. "Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell." "Who can destroy both soul and body, Henry?"
"God, of course. He can destroy anything."
"Does God destroy immortal souls?"
"He could,"
Henry responded hypothetically, although he had never considered this before. Mr. Simons asked everyone to look carefully at the passage and the verses around it to understand what point Jesus was trying to get across. It took a few moments before anyone answered, but Sally thought she could see the point. "Is it that people can kill other people, but only God can choose to give us life again or leave us dead?" "That's it, Sally," Mr. Simons smiled encouragingly. "People can kill other people, and many followers of Christ were killed for their beliefs. But those followers had the hope of resurrection and life forever. Only God has the power to destroy both our bodies and our lives. If God leaves us dead in the grave, which is what hell is, then we have no hope. Without God resurrecting us, our bodies stay dead, and so does any hope of living again." Another hand went up. This time it was Sarah. "You keep saying that hell is the grave. How would you ever possibly explain Mark chapter 9, verses 43 to 48 that way? I'll read it out for you," she offered. "And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched." Sarah looked up expectantly, and Mr. Simons nodded apologetically. "We have been talking about hell as the grave without fully explaining the subject," he began. "Who would like to look up the word for hell here?" As it had been her question, Sarah offered to do this research. Within a few minutes, she read out the information from the back of Strong's Concordance. "It's the word Gehenna, and it means the valley of the son of Hinnom, a valley of Jerusalem used as a name for the place or state of everlasting punishment. Hell." Mr. Simons nodded. "In the New Testament," he explained, "there are a few Greek words translated as hell. The most common one is Hades, which is also used as the grave or pit, but Gehenna is a different Greek word." Passing Sarah a Bible dictionary, he suggested, "Now, since this is an actual place in Jerusalem, let's find out what it was used for. Look up the word Gehenna, please." There was quite a lengthy article written about Gehenna in Hastings' Dictionary of the Bible. The basic idea was that Gehenna was a place to throw garbage. Even dead carcasses of criminals or animals were dumped there. A fire was kept continuously burning so that everything would be consumed. Mr. Simons pointed out that if this passage in Mark 9 really referred to the popular belief of a fiery underground place of torment, one would have to believe also that worms were immortal. As in the passage Sarah had read, it said, "Their worm dieth not." Instead, he carried on to say, the fire not being quenched and the undying worm speak of total destruction. Those two things continue on until there is nothing left to be consumed. In this Mark 9 passage, Jesus is warning people in a parable form that if they keep being led astray by a particular temptation in their lives,
It is better to cut off that temptation than to be thrown into Gehenna as a criminal and perish forever. With the exception of one, all the passages in the New Testament that discuss hell as a place of fire use this same word Gehenna. But the usual Greek word translated as hell is Hades, and it is synonymous with the grave. Verity was still thinking about the seminar discussion the next day as she gathered the textbook she needed to complete her homework. Purity was waiting as they had planned to go to the library that lunch hour. When they saw Thomas and Hank come around the corner, they both looked at each other in dismay. "Well, if it isn't Reverend Verity and Miss Perfectly Pure!" Hank laughed loudly. Thomas looked slightly annoyed. "Hey, Verity," he said, "I need some money." "For what?" she asked suspiciously. "I just need it. You don't need to know why." "I'm not giving you any money unless you tell me why," Verity said firmly. Purity pulled $10 from her pencil case. "Here, you can have this," she offered timidly. Thomas was taken off guard. "Are you sure?" She nodded, turning rather pink. Hank laughed crudely. "Ha! If only Miss Perfectly Pure knew what that $10 was going to buy." Thomas turned around sharply, and the two of them lumbered off outside. "I can't believe he didn't even say thank you," Verity said with disgust. "Purity, that was awfully nice of you to give him money, but I don't think you should do it again." "I was only trying to be friendly," she pleaded. "That part was good," Verity agreed. "But I'm worried that money will be buying drinks." "Oh, well." Realizing she had homework in every subject, Verity decided to bring her whole backpack to the library. They met there with Emily and Kate and settled down to study. As they all worked on various assignments, Emily, who was searching magazines for articles on environmental issues, suddenly giggled. "Look at this cartoon." She passed it around so they could all see. A sad-looking fellow wearing big, thick glasses was standing open-mouthed at St. Peter's pearly gates. St. Peter was explaining that to get into heaven, the distressed student had to answer a math question about two trains travelling at different speeds. Purity shook her head in disdain. "People don't go to heaven." Emily and Kate looked up in astonishment. "What? Of course they do." Verity smiled. "I used to think people went to heaven too, but since I've looked at it more carefully, I've learned that that isn't what the Bible teaches."
"Really?"
Verity pulled out her soul study sheet. Briefly, she tried to explain about the Hebrew and Greek words. "Look here at all the things the Bible says about souls. They can eat, die, sin, be killed." She was interrupted as a young man pulled his chair over to their table. "Hi," Peter nodded as he sat down beside her. "I overheard your conversation. What's this about souls?" Verity passed him the sheet. "Let me show you where I got this information from, Peter." She pulled out the photocopied pages Mr. Simons had given her. "These are taken from a concordance of the Old Testament. It lists all the places where a Hebrew word occurs, regardless of how it has been translated into English." Looking quickly round, Verity saw that everyone, except Purity, looked confused. She tried to explain it the way Mr. Simons had explained it to her. Peter took the pages in his hands and looked them over carefully. "So, you're saying that nephesh is the Hebrew word for soul, and it's been translated different ways in the English?"
"Yes,"
she nodded enthusiastically. "You can look at them all if you want, but let me just point out a few." Emily and Kate jumped up to look at the list as well. "Look at this," Verity said, excitement surging through her again as she pointed to the passages she had highlighted. "In Numbers chapter 6, verse 6, a person is to come at no dead body. That word for body is the same word used for soul. The passage could legitimately read, a person is to come at no dead soul. So a soul can be a corpse. Psalm 22, verse 29 says, none can keep alive his own soul. Joshua chapter 11, verse 11 says, they smote all the souls that were therein, utterly destroying them. Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 4 says, the soul that sinneth it shall die. She would have liked to carry on, but a quick glance at Peter's white, tense face made her stop. He was looking at her very seriously. Verity, do you mind if I borrow these pages tonight?
No, that would be fine, she said.
Peter spoke no more, but he picked up the papers and strode out of the library without even a nod goodbye.
Phew, exclaimed Purity. He's upset.
Emily looked like she was in shock too. Verity, This is major stuff here. Are you sure it's right?
It's only what the Bible says.
Verity shrugged, feeling her spirits dampened. It had been so exciting for her to discover what really happened after death that she expected everyone else to be just as excited. But the difference was this. For many months now, Verity had been wondering about life after death and seeking to know what was the truth. Until today, none of the others had ever given the subject more than a moment's consideration. And without first considering the question, the answer isn't always appreciated.